have to give me for some personal thoughts. But sometimes I need to hear myself say them. How does someone miss something so obvious? You know, the comfort of your routine removes the excitement of your life, and yet you just watch, doing nothing, foolishly waiting for what I don't know. You can see, but you must be blind, wandering, oblivious to the world around you, ignorant of others' importance and needs. And so the opportunity slips away. Sometimes you're all wrong when showing your love for others. Sending flowers is thoughtful. Cutting grass is helpful. But overlooking that plea is just plain stupid. You have the chance to keep something that you want, to do something for yourself. Simple love. And you're failing. But that's it, the thin line. What's acceptable versus what's not. The confident versus the questionable, decisions, discussions, behaviors that make you question yourself or your other. A low self-confidence dragging you far behind. I wish I had the answers to such problems. You can't go back, and even if you could, how would that confirm today's love? Can you explain your past to those in your presence? It's tough to answer today's questions about the whys of yesterday's person. I mean, you were different then. Maybe just a little, maybe a lot, but today's actions are meant to be new. And those things in your past seem like nothing dangerous and nothing hurtful at the time. Certainly not meant for this person, the one you care for so much. But that's just it. Some things you once considered simple can be painful down the road. But there is the math. Does 1 + 1 always equal 2? I mean, separate individuals to begin with and separate individuals to the end? I believe that there are 2 breaths and 2 brains makes 2 souls. But cannot we have 1 hope, 1 goal? Maybe 1 + 1 equals 11. Look at the equation. 2 individuals standing side by side, sharing interests, gaining trust, becoming much greater by being together than either will ever experience by being alone. Do the math. If there is only 1 love, there is no need for any line at all. Well, sometimes I just have to talk to myself. All right, thanks for listening, though. The last Sunday, here we are in June of 2008. That's right, half the year gone by. I can't even believe we're at 2008. I make myself feel so old sometimes when I say stuff like that. Professor Karen Bonding in the studio today. Karen, how are you?
Thank you. Fine this morning.
Excellent, excellent. It is a beautiful day outside.
It's gorgeous.
After you listen to this program, you're always welcome to go down to the Nelson County Festival. I was there yesterday, if you were listening to Rusty as he finished up Bluegrass Sunday morning. It was a lot of fun. Make sure to visit the Almost Home Pet Adoption Center over in the corner with the cool animals, the Vietnamese pig, who's really not much bigger than a football, the miniature horses, some baby goats, all kinds of cool stuff over there. And the wine. I don't know if I'm allowed to talk about that. Plenty to choose from, and I'll leave it at that. Professor Karen Bonding, she is from the UVA McIntyre School of Commerce. Karen, what do you teach over there?
I teach a class called Personal Finance for fourth-year students.
And that is our program for today, Personal Finance. I think I labeled it Personal Investment because that seemed to tone it down a little bit. Instead of Personal Finance makes it sound like that's for someone who's only interested in the financial world. And Personal Investment, to me, makes it appealing, hopefully, to everyone Because everyone has investment.
Yes, everybody does, and everybody should.
I'm going to give you the phone number now. You're welcome to call anytime throughout the program today. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That is the toll-free line, because investment goes far beyond the Charlottesville, Albemarle area. Karen, we exchanged some emails back and forth as we were setting up this program, and I want to jump right into the topic at hand. How does, because the economy is something that everyone is talking about right now.
That's for sure.
And I'm curious, how does confidence, how does consumer confidence play a role in personal investment? I mean, are people afraid to put money out there? Talk to me about this.
Yeah, it's a real dilemma right now, because it certainly seems every time we go to the store, prices are up. We know every time we go to the pump that the gas price is up, and so we're kind of wondering what is left. It's really, really important for people to know exactly what their expenses are. It's one of the things that I do with my students when they first walk in. The very first day of class, I tell them, I want you to write down from this moment on every single penny that you're spending. I don't care how you spend it, whether it's by using a credit card, maybe a Cavalier Advantage card, maybe cash, maybe a debit card. It doesn't matter where the money comes from, but when you're going to go over to lunch today, write down what it is that you're spending, even though you might swipe a piece of plastic. Now, what's the importance of that? The importance is that when we use plastic, we most of the time don't think about how much it costs. In other words, they have 16 different kind of lunches that they can take, different salads, pizza, whatever. And because they don't spend cash, they don't necessarily notice that one is $3.85 and one is $5.85 and something else might be even more expensive. But once you write it down, you become much more conscious of what you're spending. And I think a lot of people are just not conscious of how much money they're spending when they're using some form of plastic.
I mean, because they're focused more on the fact that they bought lunch rather than making lunch, regardless of how much either one cost them?
That's very much so. If you go to the store and you buy all the ingredients and then take it with you and bring lunch, let's say, to work, for example, it's going to cost you a whole lot less than if you stop at the corner store and take a salad. That
theoretically. I mean, there are certainly some people who, you know, they with the lunch they buy from at the grocery store to take home and make something, you know, if it's seafood salad that they make because they buy shrimp.
Well, that's true. You can certainly
Because I know some people who that is their, that's their rationalization is, well, I brought it from home. Well, what are you eating? Well, you know, I've got this and this and this and something
crab.
Else.
Yeah, no,
right.
I understand that. But I think in general, just making aware of what you're spending and how much it actually amounts to.
Are all the kids, are all the students caught off guard when they actually do this?
Absolutely, absolutely. And especially after a weekend. And quite often, obviously, on a weekend, Thursday or Friday, they might go to the ATM machine, take money out. Monday, it's gone. They don't really know where it went. We can all kind of guess. But they're surprised once they have to start writing it down. My point is that unless you know where you're spending your money, you can't know where you could be saving money.
And how does writing it down like that help?
It puts it in black and white.
Do you make them then categorize it?
Yes. After a couple of weeks, I make them then categorize and say, okay, how many times did you order pizza in, for example? Or how many times did you stop at Starbucks or some other coffee place? And so they have to start categorizing it. And that's when they begin to realize, wow, I'm really spending a lot of money. you can take the big picture and ask. I did this for a group of international or a group of students who were going to go international for a semester, and I asked them, how many of you know how much money you spent during a semester? There was only one person that raised her hand. They don't even know how much money they're spending in a semester for food and for clothes and for entertainment and dining out and gasoline, because in so many cases at UVA, their checking accounts just simply get replenished, and or the credit card is being paid by somebody else. And so they don't really have a good idea. Are we spending $3,000 for a semester or $300 or some other amount? They just don't really know.
Karen Bonding here from the UVA McIntyre School of Commerce. As we talk about personal investment, personal finance, dial up and ask your questions, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Karen, you talk about swiping the card.
Mm-hmm.
And you had told me that there were five pieces of plastic that almost everyone has.
Yeah, there are a lot of different pieces of plastic, and I'll just real briefly go through them. Most people are aware what a credit card is. It's a temporary short-term loan. If you have a Visa, MasterCard, American Express, you usually pay an interest rate somewhere in the teens, maybe 12-15% or so, if you don't pay off the bill in full at the end of each month. If you get a store card, like let's say Sears or Belk or Banana Republic or something like that, you're probably paying an interest charge up in the 20s. A lot of store cards have a lot higher rate of interest on them. So that's a credit card. It's a short-term loan. It's obviously very convenient, but you always want to make sure that you pay it off in full at the end of each month so that you don't have the finance charges. The next one is the debit card, which is the one that when you use it, money comes out of your checking account on that day or the next day. They are, of course, also very convenient because we don't have to carry cash around when we, for example, go and buy a cup of coffee or go to the grocery store, and a lot of people use the debit cards in those spots. Now, what you don't want to do is you don't want to use a debit card online, for example, to make a purchase at Amazon.com or L.L. Bean or something like that, because what you're doing then is you're giving somebody access to your checking account. And what if you get the wrong piece of merchandise? Can you return it? Are you going to get credit to your checking account? Is the money gone? You don't really know that. So any kind of online purchases or purchases made through catalog, telephone, always use your credit card, because if there is a wrong charge on your credit card bill, you can dispute the charge and the credit card company will in fact work with you. So that's the debit card. Now, we also have something called a stored value card. Think of at University of Virginia, we have the Cavalier Advantage card, and you put $50 on there, and then you can charge up to $50 in the garage or wherever it is. Or you get maybe a gift card from Barnes & Noble, and you can use it there, or Starbucks or someplace like that. And so whatever the value is on that card, you can use it up to that. But what we have found is that there are some other stored value cards that don't quite work that way, and they often come under the category of gift cards. And this is very often around Christmas time. Somebody says, well, I don't know what to send to Joe or Aunt Anna or whatever. And you go to the bank and you buy a $100 gift card from, let's say, with a MasterCard logo on it. And what happens there is that there is a charge to get the card. There's an activation charge. There is an automatic, generally 10% on top of whatever you purchase with the card. If you don't use the card, then there's a fee for that. And if you don't use it within a certain period of time, there's a fee for that. So these gift cards that have Visa or MasterCard on it are generally very bad ideas.
And if you don't use it all, I hate these cards. My mother, who my sister called me before the show, and she said, you know, hey, Grandma's listening. Hi, Grandma Alma. My mother loves to give these out at Christmas or as a birthday present. And Mom, if you're listening, I'm sorry, but I hate that card because not so much for the things you mentioned, but if it's a $100 card and you don't keep track of what you're using it, if you don't use it in $25 increments or buy all $100 at one time, you know, it's like, oh, how much is left? $8.72. And then you discard it because you're not sure what's left on it.
Right.
Or there are a very large number of businesses, at least in this town, who don't know how to process it.
Mm-hmm.
If you buy the Barnes & Noble card, well, they know how to do that. But if you show up with the American Express or the MasterCard gift card, it works in a different process than the – and Barnes & Noble is easy to pick on.
Mm-hmm.
The Barnes & Noble processing is different. And so that cashier isn't familiar with how to do it, and so it may not be done at all. It may be done incorrectly. It may – you may have to slow the whole process down. It may take you a longer period of time. I hate the gift card, Mother.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing, of course, is let's say you get $25 worth of a gift card and you find something that costs $20. Okay, so now what are you going to do with the remaining four or five after tax? Or if you find something that costs more, then now you're out some cash. And so,
Because you tend to spend more than you might otherwise.
Exactly. Yeah. And then we have the smart cards. Smart cards come in a lot of different forms, but they often have a lot of information on them, personal information. For example, for swiping to get into a building, health information on them, and things like that. So it's something you want to be really careful of. I do want to tell you a little story I saw on Yahoo Finance this week. And this was a journalist up in Washington, D.C., and he was using his Bank of America credit card to pay for a parking meter up in Washington, D.C. Well, it was one of those electronic meters where you could actually swipe your card, and it was $2 for the parking. So next time when he looked at his statement, he noticed that there was an additional $10 on there. So he went to Bank of America and said, well, what is this all about? And Bank of America said, well, the $2 is treated as a cash advance, and therefore, we're charging you $10 for that. So his $2 parking meter suddenly became a $12 charge. Plus, they put it on his on an account that charged interest, even though he had an APR 0% transfer account. So you just have – I cannot say enough about how careful you have to be with your plastic.
All right, Karen Bonding, professor at the UVA McIntyre School of Commerce, here with us today on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, 11:19 here. I'm going to take a quick break. We are going to come back and talk about how to deal with the credit and debit when it gets out of hand, folks with mortgage payments higher than their home value, and some other things. How do you save money now that your budget, a lot more of it has been directed towards such things as gas and food? All right, markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley mostly cloudy today. Showers and thunderstorms, highs 80 to 85, lower 90s over those folks in Richmond. Showers continuing tonight, lows 60 to 65. Then tomorrow, partly sunny, some afternoon showers and thunderstorms, highs 80 to 85. And in the valley, currently there's a few clouds and 80 degrees, 78 in Lynchburg, 84 in Richmond, and 82 in beautiful Charlottesville.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, Express Lube is supporting us today. You can find them on Hannah Circle in Waynesboro. Express is your headquarters for oil changes, tire rotation, power steering flushes, and all fluid checks. Express Lube, your one-stop auto shop. For more information, it's 540-943-4414. And the folks at Blue Ridge Mountain Sports, you can get your outdoor sandals as well as gear for all travel, including shorts, duffel bags, and sun hats. You'll find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Charlottesville Barracks Road Shopping Center and at brms.com. All right, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Feel free to dial us up. Ask Professor Karen Bonding from the McIntyre School of Commerce a question. You don't have to give your name if you feel like it's personal in regards to your finance. You can come on air as anonymous, or you can just pass along your question through Sean and Michael, who are out there today. Karen, questions about what to do once your credit use has gotten out of hand.
First of all, what a lot of people may not know is that they can go into a website called www.annualcreditreport.com. A few years ago, Congress passed a law that every single person who had a credit card should be allowed to view his or her credit report once a year. So it's called annualcreditreport.com. And you should go in there and request to get your credit reports. You want to make sure that the information that's on there is correct. That's the first thing. If you find that there are things that are not correct, get them corrected, and it will show on the form how you do that. If you are...
What kind of incorrect things would you find?
There could be cards on there that you have never had. There could be balances on there that you don't have. It's mostly cards that you don't own. And the problem is that the FICO score, which is the score that banks and lots of other entities use, and I'll get back to that in a moment, the FICO score is dependent on that your report is correct. It derives a lot of information from that credit report. And you want to have a FICO score that's 760 or above. That's what banks and other lenders are looking at.
Out of what? 760 out of 1,000?
Out of 850. 850 is the top.
That's a tight percentage.
It's very tight, and it's going up, as you can probably imagine, because the banks are getting very leery about lending any kind of money. They don't have any money, let's just put it that way. So they really don't want to lend. So that number has gone up. A couple of years, it was 740. The last I checked, it was 760, but it could definitely go up. So you want to make sure that that is correct. And again, if it's not, then get it corrected. You do not want to go into what's called freecreditreport.com. The problem with the freecreditreport.com is that what you may not notice in the mice type is that you sign up for a monthly reporting service. Well, you don't need a monthly reporting service. You just need to know that your credit report at the moment is correct.
All right. So what's the say again one more time the difference?
The difference is you want to have annualcreditreport.com. There are three providers, Equifax, Experience, and TransUnion. You can print out all three reports. They should be roughly the same. You can also get your FICO score. You may have to pay a couple of bucks for that. You do not want to go into freecreditreport.com because what they do is they sign you up for a service which is going to cost $11.95 a month. Well, you don't need to pay that because you can get it. You can get your report the other way.
All right, so annualreport.com, not freecreditreport.com.
That is correct.
All right, 979-0919. I see somebody's on that line. Now it's free. Maybe they're passing their message through Sean and Michael.
Let me just talk just a second about the FICO score. You might say, well, I'm not in the position of having to go out and borrow money for a car or for any other purpose. But the FICO score is used for a lot of other things. It is used for your insurance premiums, specifically on your car insurance. It's also for homeowners insurance. It's if you're signing up for a cell phone or an apartment. We have also in jobs, almost all employers today, when you're applying for a job, will look at your credit score. And that is mainly because if you can't take care of your own finances, what would make an employer think that you would be able to take care of his?
Let me talk, as we're talking about your credit report and spending money with checks, I think most people now have gotten their economic stimulus check, or that's, it will soon be coming. Mine is sitting on my table while I wait to decide what to do with it.
Okay.
What should we do with it, or how can we use it properly as we talk about personal investment and personal finance?
Right. That's an excellent question. And what you want to look at is if you have any credit card debt outstanding, then that should be the first place where the money should go. If your credit card bills are all paid up and everything is fine, then you should save the money.
I had heard that having a zero balance on your credit card was not a good thing.
No, it is a good thing.
That you should always have a little something, maybe just to buy it and pay it off and buy it and pay it off.
No, you should.
Is that American Express telling me that?
Probably, or somebody, because, see, the thing is, if you don't pay off your credit card bill in full every month, then the interest, the finance charges start at the moment you make a purchase. There's no more grace period. Grace period completely goes away if you don't pay off your bill in full. So it can become a very expensive purchase.
So the number one thing to do with your stimulus check is to pay off any outstanding debt that you have.
Correct. Because the thing is, if you think about it, whether it's a Visa and MasterCard in interest rates in the teens or so, or if it's a store card where the interest rate might be higher, you can't make that kind of money if you put the check into an investment account. I mean, you would be extraordinarily lucky.
You're talking about teens in the teens for percentage return.
Yes.
Because that's what I have going out.
Yes,
If I owe them $1,000, I'm paying them, 12% debt.
Right. If you could,
but I'm not going to make 12% on the $1,000 if I invest it.
No. If you invest it, it would be good if you could, and you could for sure say, well, I'm on an after-tax basis, I'm going to be making so much money, or 12% or 15%. But chances are that that's not going to happen. So you will want to first pay down your debt and then start looking at putting money towards investment.
11:28 here on the Wake Up Call. Karen Bonding in here, UVA McIntyre School of Commerce professor. We're talking about personal investment. Let me thank 45fix.com for their support today. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate, no obligation estimates available anytime. That's 45fix.com, the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. Karen, we're sitting here at 11:28, and I guess that last caller did not have a question.
Okay.
Although someone else is welcome to call up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. But it seems to me this is very similar to a class or something that you were talking about earlier before we came in, FLY, Financial Literacy for Youth, and the fact that we have a UVA professor on air who is, if you don't like my question and you got your own question, then call up and ask it. What are you doing? You are welcome to take advantage of this. It's free. And you were mentioning earlier, tell people about FLY.
Okay.
And how that was sort of disregarded at this point.
Correct. A couple of years ago, a minority student at UVA came to me, and he had an idea. He felt that he wanted to talk to high school students about financial literacy. He felt that there wasn't a lot of financial literacy out there, and we can all agree that that is true. And he wanted to focus on minority students, and he was targeting Charlottesville High School. So over about 18 or 20 months, he and I worked together. I was the advisor. He got a group of 6 students together from UVA, all third or fourth year students, and they put this thing together called FLY, Financial Literacy for Youth. They put a program together. I helped them find a book, helped them set up a curriculum. But they did all the work. They went to the high school, got the headmaster's approval. They marketed on campus at Charlottesville High School during lunch hour and so forth. And they ran their first program this past spring. They didn't get too many students. It was an after-hour session, but they had buses and everything was taken care of. It was all on the up and up. Then they thought, well, let's do one for the summer, and we can have like a summer camp at UVA. And so they sent out letters to parents. They organized the program. They raised a lot of money from a variety of different areas to make sure that the students could stay on campus. All the food was provided, the T-shirts and the certificates and everything was provided, sent out letters to everybody. And they have not had one single positive response to that. And it's 4 days at the end of July. And I just find that that is astounding. when we think about the low level of financial literacy in this country overall, but here is a chance for students, and it doesn't have to be a minority student, it can be any student, junior or senior at any of the high schools for that matter, but the letter I know was just at Charlottesville High School, but these students can come to UVA, and there will be games during the day, they will participate in ways to learn about money. The book that they're going to be using is Financial Literacy for Teens, and I just think it's a phenomenal opportunity for youth, and we just found that nobody signed up for it, and I was just very, very surprised.
But how different is that from the adults, you know, in this area or nationally in terms of taking the opportunity to learn more about your money and what to do with it what you're doing with it now.
In some ways, you're right about that, although I will say for about 8 years, I taught an evening class. For a couple of years, I taught two evening classes through continuing education at UVA, and those classes were usually oversubscribed, and that was mainly for adults getting up into maybe the 40s and 50s. And I think maybe that's the time when we begin to say, wait a minute, I really do need to think about retirement.
Is it too late?
No, it's not too late. But obviously it would have been, it's much more difficult because you have to save more money. It's much easier if you start in your 20s and put the $25 a month or $50 a month, put that away and start putting in your...
I save all my quarters.
That's a good idea. What do you do with them?
I usually take them to that thing at Harris Teeter and put the change in there and then get a iTunes card.
Oh.
And then go spend it on iTunes.
I see.
Is that not okay?
I wouldn't call it an investment, but...
I don't know. I have a rock and music collection.
I know you do.
11:33 here on a Sunday morning wake-up call. UVA professor Karen Bonding here in the studio. As we talk about personal finance, personal investment, call us up with your question. I have one here in front of me from Anonymous, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That is the toll-free line. Please call us up and take advantage of Professor Bonding being in the studio. Karen, we were talking about going online to check your investment, your credit score.
Okay.
If a bad item is on your credit report, how long for it to clear? And how much, in my addition to that, is how much effort does it take to get it to clear?
Yeah, I would say that it probably will take about 3 months, about two or three cycles before it will show up on the report.
By that you mean if it's incorrect because I bought it or they claim that I bought it on June 10th, it's not going to show up on a report until October.
Are you talking
October
about credit
10th?
Report or credit bill?
They're talking about credit report.
The credit report. Okay, you send in... however, the credit report asks you to correct the error, and it would tell you how to do that. I would say it will probably take 2 or 3 months before it goes through. The key thing here is there are errors and then there are errors. There are some errors that are not going to affect your credit score. And if it doesn't affect your credit score, it's obviously less important. But if you're standing saying, okay, I need to get a loan within the next 6 months.
I'm going to buy a house. We're
right.
looking to buy
then,
a house.
Then, of course, you want to get that credit score repaired as quickly as possible. And you want to become very active in getting that credit report corrected. So it becomes very, very important.
Because you don't want to find that out when
when
you start checking banks to find out what the percentages would be.
Or you're applying for a job. You thought you were a shoo-in for a job and then you get... declined the job and you're not quite sure. Well, the employer will not tell you, or I would say it would be rare that the employer would tell you, well, we checked your credit score and we don't like what we're seeing. So you want to make sure that you check that before you go apply for a job.
And one more time, the proper online.
Annualcreditreport.com.
Annualcreditreport.com. 11:36 here with Karen Bonding from the UVA McIntyre School of Commerce. We were talking about how to buy a home. By the way, folks, next week, sort of a part two to this program, as I have Jim Duncan in, as we talk about real estate and the market, et cetera, along with that. But, Karen, in terms of buying the home, there's a lot of people out there right now whose debt is much greater than it might otherwise be because the real estate market has changed so much that the debt on the mortgage debt, what they owe for the house has changed dramatically. What do you do about that?
Yeah.
The value of the home, much different.
Correct. The banks did no one any favors, as far as I'm concerned, when they allowed people 0% down or just 3% down or 5% down. If you don't have a good down payment on a house, then, of course, when values change, or in this case, when values go down, there is no more equity in the house.
Is there something that people can do about that?
At this point, you know, I would say stay with it, because in most cases, people buy a home in order to stay in the home. Now, speculators or people who wanted to flip houses, that's a completely different category. But if this is the house that you really want to stay in, then you are probably going to have to really tighten the belt and stay with it. And you can try to renegotiate with banks. They're not very amenable at the moment. It's a very, very hard choice. It's a very hard choice, because if you walk away, then, of course, you owe a whole lot of money. And what's that going to do? That will completely destroy your credit.
All right, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markets of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Fridays after 5, outdoor dining. Charlottesville folks tend to take their downtown mall for granted. But if a planned renovation happens, the whole experience could drastically change. With the heat upon us and talk of the reservoir never ending, this week's expert talks about how to conserve water in little ways. And The Hook's special section on weddings helps you plan or just dream. The Hook, reminding listeners that the investment is free every Thursday. And let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And I know you won't be going anywhere, because Drew Thompson has just walked into the studio. He's here for Les Temps Perdue, the best of 80s and 90s alternative. For some reason, he won't play New Kids on the Block or Aerosmith or Kylie Minogue, but you will hear Bare Naked Ladies, Aha, and Hole. And requests always welcome. Les Temps Perdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music. All right, back in action with Karen Bonding from the McIntyre School of Commerce. I'm going to stop giving out the number because no one seems to care but me. That's not true. 979-0919. For the local folks, and the toll-free 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Karen, we talk about how you don't seem to get that concerned about the personal investment until you get to your 40s or 50s, for the majority of folks anyway.
That's correct.
But now, is it or is it okay to be buying stocks now?
Oh, great.
I mean, it's a very volatile session of our economy there.
That's very true. But as Warren Buffett would say, stocks may be on sale now. When prices go down on something, we tend to flock to the store. We love sales. But somehow when stocks go down, people get very leery. Now, in most cases, people invest on a monthly basis, and that would be either through a 401k, 403b plan. Those are employer-based tax-deferred retirement plans. Or you might be using an IRA and putting money aside on a monthly basis. Well, think of it this way. If you're putting $100 aside every single month and the market is going down, then you buy more units for the same $100 because the price gets cheaper. And then you also participate in the upturn.
But then why do I have negative numbers coming in on my 401k?
No, I understand that. But that's because the whole market is going down. But you need to continue to put money in on a monthly basis. Because if you look over the long term, markets do go up. Markets do go up over the long term. And you simply need to take the good with the bad, or the bad with the good in this particular case.
So stop looking at it on a
absolutely
on a quarterly basis when I get my little piece of paper.
I know.
And I'm
just,
like, what is that? I gave them this number of money and you're reporting less.
Exactly. And it's a very, very frustrating situation. We went through what's called a bear market early in this decade for 2.5 years. And somehow, you know, we survived that. We're going to survive this as well. This is a downturn in the economy. There are lots of areas in the economy that are doing very, very well. In fact, one of them is technology. And then you have a lot of the alternative energy companies that are doing very well. Oil companies, obviously, are doing very well. So, I mean, there are lots of areas, companies that export a lot of goods because of the weak dollar. They have done very well. So lots of areas in the economy that are doing very well. And you just simply need to kind of close your eyes, put your money aside every single month, have it automatically deducted out of your paycheck so you don't ever even have it to spend. And then maybe look at it annual basis in January, February when you're getting prepared to do taxes or something like that. And you will just be surprised how much is there. The other thing is that some people even leave money on the table.
What does that mean?
What that mean? At University of Virginia, we get what's called a match in our 403B plan.
Right.
And that means that if you put money in, then the University of Virginia will also put some money in. But if you don't put money in, then they won't put any money in there either.
Right, to a certain level. Like if you give 4% of your paycheck, they'll give 4%. But if you give 5 or 6%, they're still only giving 4%.
But some people put in 0%, and then they don't get the 4%. So that's what I say. That's like leaving, you know, $20 bills on the street and walking by them and not picking them up. It's money. And some people choose not to participate in their employer's plans. And that's a shame because they could really benefit greatly from that.
As we talk about the 401k here with Professor Bonding, how much work should I do myself in terms of investment? How much work should I let someone else do, like going to the, you know, clicking on the button that says, we'll invest for you? You know, what's your age? You know, what's your goal? And, okay, then we'll buy these stocks or hedge funds for you.
Right. First of all, I want to say that if you go to a full-service broker, then you will be paying quite a bit of fees. The best thing is to go online, and most people today of investing age, they're comfortable with going to the Internet and making decisions on the Internet. So you go into some of the mutual fund providers, and there are three big ones that are quite cheap, has a lot of information on them, educational tools, different investment choices, and that would be Vanguard and Fidelity and T. Rowe Price. And they're all companies that are very large, will not go under. You can put your money with them.
But wouldn't somebody have said that about
so forth?
Which company was it that just crashed in the last 2 months? Bears?
Oh, Bear Stearns. No, that's a different situation.
People wouldn't have said that?
No. See, the thing is, when you buy mutual funds through, for example, any of these three that I mentioned, they are really just the agent, if you will. They take your money and then invest it as you have told them to invest it. For example, in a mutual fund that invests in U.S. stocks, or a mutual fund that invests in U.S. Treasury bonds. So it's not like the company Fidelity or Vanguard has your money. It's that they're the agent for you to invest. So you're investing in the American economy. You may be investing in the global economy. But so you are an owner of those shares. So no, Bear Stearns is a completely different issue.
And that is?
It's an investment bank.
Well, but I mean, that gives up. I think I'm, I say this all the time, but I'm a representative of people who are like, ooh, that makes me really nervous about where my money goes. Because look, everyone's talking about how this 100-year-old
right.
business crashed all of a sudden. And
well, if you had stock in Bear Stearns and that was the only stock you held, let's say, then you lost a lot of money because it was taken over by J.P. Morgan at $10 a share. That is correct. But if you buy a mutual fund, then you're owning 50, 100, 500, maybe even 1,000 companies. So if one of them goes belly up, the other ones are still there.
But as far as purchasing stocks, and by the way, phone line is open, 979-0919. The Dow was on a 21-year low just on Thursday, I believe, and you are saying that that's okay.
It is okay. Markets go up and down, and it is okay. You can continue to buy. And
then why does everyone have such a negative reaction to that? Why are the newspaper headlines in such a scary fashion?
Yeah, it's because scare stories sell.
And that's really all it is? Instead of saying,
stocks
at a 21-year low, buy stocks.
Why are you not reading the stories, or why do the newspapers not have front-page stories to say, look at how well technology is doing, look at how well this sector is doing? No, because people don't want to read how good things are. There is this very kind of upfront, scary thing right now of markets, and the housing crisis is obviously putting a lot of people in a very bad spot, but you kind of need to look through that. We've been through wars, we've been through down cycles in the economy, we've been through down cycles in the stock market, and they come back, they bounce back.
All right, here's a question from Anonymous. Should more safe investments be made until the recession ends?
One, we're not in a recession. I think that's that's a very important.
Did you vote for President Bush?
It doesn't matter what I did. Recession is a mathematical term, if you will. It means that the gross domestic product is a negative territory. We're not in negative territory. So recession is simply a definition. Now, some people may feel that they personally are in a recession, and I completely understand that. But the problem is we never quite know when a recession starts and when a recession ends until about 18 months later. And that's just simply because of the way statistics are being gathered. But I would say if this person here has some money, start putting a little bit aside. You can leave it in a money market mutual fund or in a savings account for now where you're getting 3 or 4%. That's okay if you feel better about that and wait until later to employ it. But don't wait. By all means, don't wait until somebody says, okay, now recession is over or now this and such is over. That is not a good idea because then the market has already moved up. The market is anticipatory and it looks ahead, and you want to be there when it does that.
All right, here's another caller question. Apparently no one wants to come online or on air today. A question, where to cut money in the budget?
Where to cut money?
I mean, you started
right.
the program
right.
with
expenses.
Right,
yeah.
with expenses about
right.
writing things down.
Right.
And it's where to cut money in the budget that isn't investment money. And I'm assuming that this caller is talking about the fact that everything has gone up in price, mm-hmm. you know, gas, mm-hmm. Food costs, et cetera. So if you're on a, you know, a limited paycheck, and I guess
right.
it doesn't matter how large or small your paycheck is.
No, it doesn't.
If you've set aside a certain percentage, you know, what does this caller do to?
Yeah, where to cut, that would, to me, indicate that this caller understands where his or her expenses are. And so you have to go down the line. I can tell you where some of the black holes are generally, or at least this is where I found. One is going out for dinner or entertainment or movies or something like that. That's quite costly. Another area is gifts. I find that most Americans are very, very gracious and really want to give gifts for weddings and showers and birthdays and everything else.
And dinners and, out for sanity. I mean, a little treat for yourself.
Yeah, well, no, that's true. But I say it might be one of those areas where you could cut. You don't have to go out for dinner maybe every week, maybe every other week or once a month. But I find that gifts just kind of stopping in and having a snack or whatever, those can sometimes be really black holes where people spend a lot of money. So that might be an area where this person can possibly save. Another thing is more carpooling, you know, less trips, walk some more, get your bicycle out, whatever. All of those things that you read about in the paper. But as far as the budget is concerned, look very specific at each item and see where you might be able to cut.
All right, 11:52 on the wake-up call with UVA McIntyre School of Commerce Professor Karen Bonding. Let me ask a question. I don't know why no one wants to come on air. I guess personal investment and finance is a very personal topic.
It is personal.
I mean, because that's one of the questions that people, almost everyone, never answers is how much, you know, put yourself in this, you know, category of how much money you take home yearly. They'll answer everything else. You know, but they never want to answer that. Okay. How much can a potential spouse's credit affect your credit? Is it to the degree where it should be a factor in marrying them?
The answer is yes. If I've had some students that have broken up with their boyfriends or girlfriends after they have taken my class because they found that the other person, their at that point significant other, was really messy, was not paying attention to where money was being spent, had a lot of credit card debt. And until that's being resolved, I think you need to take a very good, close look at that. Because there are some people, it's just really hard for them to stop spending. It can be an addiction, just like gambling, eating, drinking. There are addictions, and some people really cannot stop spending. It would be something that you would definitely need to discuss prior to walking down the aisle.
Where was I? Oh, we're talking about personal investment, and I wanted to ask you a question about how do you think ahead about personal retirement issues while building a nest egg for your kids? Because there's, I would assume that there's only a certain amount of money for the majority of people. And how do you decide what's the split?
Right.
Because you want to save money for your kids to go to college, or, you know, you want to pass along some of the family finance to your children to make sure that your grandchildren have something just in case or whatever, but still making sure that you have something.
Yeah.
How do you determine?
It's excellent, because what we're seeing now is that a lot of Americans are marrying at a later age, and or they're having children at a later age. And that means that when they go to college, these parents are often up in their 40s and 50s. And that's a time when you should really be very seriously looking at how much am I going to need if I want to retire? And by the way, when am I going to retire? Where is it? Where is this point, and how much money is enough for my retirement? I would say this. Retirement, saving for retirement, on the first day you get a job, whether you're 21, 25, 18, you should start saving for retirement. And the reason I say that is because if you start really, really early, then once the kids come along, you are in very, very good shape, because your accounts will have already been built up, and you can then say, okay, I'm going to take a little time off here, and I'm going to put my kids through college, and then I'll get back to my retirement account. If you haven't done that in your 20s and 30s, then you're stuck with a really bad problem. What's my priority? Is it retirement, or is it kids in college? And a lot of people put kids as a priority. That, unfortunately, is not correct, because if you don't put retirement as a priority, then who's going to pay for your retirement? There isn't anybody else.
My kids. Not that I have any.
Yeah.
My sister, who's listening, and my grandmother. Sorry, Grandma.
Yeah. The problem is we can't depend on our kids to pay for our retirement. And with us living a whole lot longer, and with it being a whole lot more expensive than it used to be, and Social Security is only part of the income that we get when we retire.
Do you think we
just have to make retirement a priority. Now, if you think about it, a lot of kids, if they really want to go to college, and we're kind of helping them along, I'm not saying that you shouldn't put anything aside for college for kids, but if you think about it, kids are going to be a whole lot more incentivized if they're going to have to put some money into this themselves. They're going to get done quicker. They're going to be much more focused. They're going to want to get out of there and get a job. So there's nothing wrong with letting kids pay for part of their college.
Do you think that we are at this sort of theory that if our kids don't take care of us, that the state or the government will? You know, people don't expect to find themselves, you know, living on the street. You know, they're the crazy cat lady pushing the shopping cart around who didn't have any retirement funds to reach for. It won't happen to me. I got two kids. There's something for the state. You can always be sent to a state home, how awful that may seem now, but, you know, it's out there.
It's not looking good, and it's a time bomb, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, 11:58 on the wake-up call. Finishing the hour, we can probably, if somebody wants to call in the last minute or two, another anonymous caller, feel free. This is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. Karen Bonding, professor, teaches a course on personal finance at the UVA McIntyre School of Commerce, the undergrad course. Karen, you're talking about the book from the Darden School.
Right. Within the last month, a business professor at the Darden School, Ron Wilcox, wrote a book, and it's just out now. It's called Whatever Happened to Thrift, and it's about all the things that we've just talked about. Why are Americans not saving? And what's the result going to be? Like I said, it's a bit of a time bomb. This is a very well-written book. He talks about why people are not saving, and I thought that was very interesting. What he's saying is part of it is consumerism. We always want what the neighbor has. And another thing is that most Americans are very optimistic. I'm going to get a better job. I'm going to be promoted. Things are going to look better. They have a very, very high confidence in their own abilities. And that's why a lot of Americans don't save and wait to tomorrow and say, no, I'm going to do that next year or next time or whatever. And that's part of the savings problem in this country. And again, it's Whatever Happened to Thrift by Ron Wilcox. I'm not sure whether it's at Barnes & Noble or any other bookstore in town yet, because it's just come out.
But you can probably get it at Amazon, but don't use your
debit
card to get it, right?
You got it.
All right. You can find this program www.sevillepodcast.com. Hopefully a few hours later into the afternoon, but certainly usually by Mondays. Professor Bonding, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you so much, inviting me.
Well, sorry that the questions didn't make it until later in the hour. Yeah. Again, next week, Jim Duncan will be here as sort of a follow-up, part two to this, as we spend more time on the real estate market and how the economy and the personal finance and investments are working in that area. Everyone, have a lovely week.
Thank you, Rick.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.